start recording. I have it open. Hey, Steve, how's it going?
It's going good, Jeff. Do you know what season this is of Into the Vertical Blank?
I think it's season 7 of Into the Vertical Blank.
That answer is wrong. It's the last season.
Oh, it's the final season. You are correct. It's the final season of Into the Vertical Blank.
Why is it the final season?
Because the final season goes on forever.
That's right, because we're gonna stop making seasons and just start numbering them. This is actually number 104.
So. 100. Into the vertical blank, Generation Atari. Into the vertical blank, Generation Atari.
Season 7 will be the last season of Into the Vertical Blank because it will just go on into eternity as long as we do
it. For as long as we decide to make another episode, right? Exactly.
It's really more enjoyable, I think, to number the episodes and know that we've done 104 of them.
Yeah.
Now, in that 104, there are some, like, repeats. So,
well, there's also a bunch of bonus episodes that aren't numbered.
There's bonus episodes, yeah, but I think I'm going to go back and number them all anyway, just for the fun of it. But this one is 104. Last one was 103. 103 was our visit to the Vintage Computer Festival, SoCal, which literally came out yesterday as we're recording this. And what was so exciting about VCF was how many Atari 8-bit computers were there.
Oh, there's a lot of Atari 8-bit computers there.
And I think that you and I have been sort of re-energized about the Atari 8-bit because of the subject of today's podcast.
The podcast subject today is the Atari 400 Mini.
Atari 400 Mini. Now, we've actually talked a lot about the Atari 800 on this podcast.
We haven't
done a video about it, but we had the best Christmas ever, which is our story of getting our Atari 100, was just on the podcast itself a couple episodes ago, a rerun of that, which we ran a few Christmases ago too. And I'm working on a video version of that that's expanded to about double the length, so it's a longer version of the story. So that should come this year as well in the what we're dubbing the unofficial year of the Atari 800, because of Atari 8-bit, because we got a lot of content about the Atari 8-bit.
One thing I want to say is about the numbering of the episodes. It reminds me. So some of the Atari magazines, even the Atari 8-bit magazines, and sometimes the UK ones, especially the UK ones, let's put it that way. They started out with numbering systems that were like volume 1, number 2, and then later they would move to like just numbers, and so it got people confused about what number was what. We just did that with our podcast.
Oh yeah, we messed up. Anybody who cares,
no one cares.
Keeping track, but if someone was, we have just messed them up because, 2020 hindsight, we should have started by just numbering anyway. I remember the one time on the Antic podcast, they talked about our podcast. They said something about seasons. What the hell is that?
Whatever. Exactly. Yeah, well, we like to be different. So, hey, Steve, what is the Atari 400 Mini?
Well, apparently, PlayOn, the people who made the Atari 2600 Plus, I believe, have designed a mini Atari 400. Well, it looks like a mini Atari 400, but it's really a mini Atari 8-bit compatible system that can play all the games from all the Atari 8-bit compatible systems from the 400, 800, 800 XL, XEGS, I believe, and even the 5200.
Well, you can play any. It's an emulator. It can play anything, basically.
It can play anything, but it's designed to play those games out of the box, right? It's got. If you see it, it's really interesting. It looks like the 400. No one's talked about whether the keyboard works or not, which I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
It does not.
Apparently, there's a door there in the front, just like on the 400.
The door does not open. I heard also.
It's the first time Atari has really acknowledged the 8-bit line. The new Atari has acknowledged the 8-bit line in any real way.
Yeah, they kind of did before. What did they do before, Steve?
A little bit on Atari 50th anniversary.
That's not what I mean, but you're right. They did a little bit. Where did they acknowledge it before that was just made me and you angry?
Oh, they named the Atari VCS.
Yes.
Did they actually have a 400?
Yes, supposedly. I don't know if it ever came out, but someone mentioned that.
They're like Atari VCS 800. I mean, I think they knew they once owned those trademarks or something, but that was
really aggravating. To explain, the new VCS, that's the emulation box that you can download and you can buy, and it's basically, you know, competition for like an Xbox, kind of. It's just in that form factor. They named it the 400 and 800, the versions of that, and I think there was two different versions. That just chapped my hide. I like the fact they acknowledged it, angry that they were taking those names and applying it to another, taking the VCS name and applying it to something, they're taking the 400 and 800 name and applying it to something else also. When those exist, make something new, please.
Well, let's just talk about this in the abstract. Like, we have probably tweeted to Atari 1,000 times about, why don't you do something with the Atari 8-bit? I don't know, 1,000 right. times. But I mean, over the years, over the past almost 20 years that we have been blogging and making videos and stuff about Atari, we've probably talked about this. This is probably the thing we've wanted the most.
Right.
Is right. some acknowledgement that the Atari 8-bit line was probably the most advanced computer line of its time. You know, released in 1979, the 400 and 800 were based on the 6502 processor, and they designed by Jay Miner, Joe DeCur, and a bunch of other people. It's really the son of the Atari VCS and the father of the Amiga, if you yes. think about the lineage of and how. In 1979 it could play games as good or better than the NES could 8 years later. It was so advanced for the time. It was also super expensive.
Yeah, super expensive.
They said the 400, 800, the original names were like what the price might be, but it actually came out way higher than that.
Yeah, it did. I mean, because the 400 at $549, 800 at like $999 or something like that. Originally, yeah.
But the 800 was our first computer, got 1983, our first real computer, and we loved the living
out of love that. The bejesus out of that puppy.
Yeah, it was the greatest thing ever, and it really gave us our start into our lives, you know, right. being technical people. It was really the driving force that got us anything, you know, out of life, you know. And so we, you know, it's hard to imagine where we would be as people without getting an Atari 100 in 1983.
Yes.
Which is what that story the best effing Christmas ever is all about. It's really not about the best Christmas. It's about the fact that one Christmas became the best thing ever, I guess, if that
right.
makes sense.
Also, just to, as an aside, I don't think more than one or two of our friends knew throughout high school until we got to the ST that we had an Atari computer, because it's something you didn't tell anyone.
Okay, so here is the 400 mini. It's $119.99, but I think can you still go to Amazon and get it? Let's check it out. In Amazon, it is pre-order. You can pre-order now.
Yeah, because they sold out. Oh, they sold out of pre, yeah, which is good.
Or whatever reason, because their shipping is still garbage. I mean, I'm still waiting for things for them to ship.
Oh, pre-order. Yeah, yeah. Because it's only a pre. I'm sorry. It's only a pre-order. So you can.
Who knows? Who knows? But you can get on the wait list here.
Now, I don't know if that's actual size. Check out the size of the joystick and the size of the 400 mini. If it literally is the size of a keychain.
I think it might be a little out of.
They said it's a half size. That's not the size.
That's not a half size.
Yeah, that's not a half size.
That's like 25%.
That's really cute, actually, in a way. It's also kind of disconcerting in a way, too.
It's disconcerting because it looks like if you're.
It's like a USB keychain. Anyway.
Yeah, if you listen to this, it looks just a little bit bigger than the base of a CX40 joystick, which is kind of weird.
Oh, that actually could be. Where's my joystick?
So, it looks cool, though.
Yes.
Here's the little video we've been showing and the whole time behind there. It kind of shows some of the games that they're going. And it says packed with features. So it's got four USB joystick ports, right? It's cool. We'll see if Asteroids is on here, because Asteroids is a four-player game.
Well, yeah, the list.
And I know that, and of course, Mule is on here. It's a four-player game. and it comes with this weird joystick, which is the CX stick, which apparently has more buttons on it than a normal
joystick. Now, the buttons don't occur in places you'd expect, though.
Yeah, I can't tell if any.
They're around the ring. You know the ring of the joystick?
Ring.
Yeah, so the joystick has the yellow ring at the bottom. It has these buttons there.
Right here. I guess it's not really designed for you to use. It's designed for you to, like, select things or something, but not, like while you're playing.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe with the other hand, you got to be really dexterous, I think. But we'll see.
So, HDMI out, which, of course, all these things should. And then it also allows you...
Rewind,
which is interesting. And then it allows you to load your ROMs, which seems weird to me for Atari to be selling something that allows you to load your own ROMs when they're busy monitoring.
Well, that's Play On. Play On has done that with the Amiga and the C64 machines. So you can load your own games on.
Is it Play On or is it somebody else? Is it Play On?
It's Retro Games. I'm sorry. Play On helped design it, but Retro Games is putting it out.
Okay. So that was the same people who did the C64
right.
Mini and the Amiga Mini.
Yeah.
So
Can attest, those are two really nice machines.
So let me go and share something else here, which is the games list. So from the top, I think you may know more about some of these than I do. So it comes with 25 games. The first one is Basketball, which I don't know if that's Alan Miller's game or not.
It's I think it is Alan Miller's
basketball. The original two-player basketball. I thought he did the one on the VCS. I'm not sure if he did the one on the 800. But it's a fun little game. It and the Atari VCS basketball game are very close to one another. Asteroids is here. Asteroids is odd, but it has a four-player
right
mode, which makes your four joystick's worthwhile.
Asteroids was not included with the Atari 2600 Plus, was it?
I don't think in that
cartridge. So I don't think it was. So anyway, that's it's a different version of Asteroids.
Centipede, which is a very very well done version of Centipede. I mean, when it comes to these arcade games, people can now play the actual arcade game, so
right.
The fact that the 800 did a really good version of Centipede back then is notable, but maybe not that interesting. I think what is interesting is the Asteroids, which is four players.
Well, actually, what's interesting more is the 1 year later, they didn't put out the Atari 800 version for the 5200. They made a brand new version, might have been done by GCC, but I'm not sure, that looks a little better, and that's the one most Atari 800 people...
Not
oh, okay. Well, that's the one that a lot of Atari 800 people would rather play on their machine is the 5200.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, the one for the original 800 one was a bit odd. I remember even playing it the first day we had our Atari 800, and it was like, okay, let's move on to Centipede.
It's just kind of missing a few colors here and there they could have added to it. That's all.
There's something weird about it. Missile Command is great. I mean, obviously it's Missile Command, but you can play it in the arcade. So,
yeah.
Minor 2049er, which was on the Atari 50th, but it's a great game. Also, super effing hard. I mean, it's like you have to, like, it's pixel perfect jumping.
It's not pixel perfect. It is segment of the platforms perfect, but not pixel perfect. I just played it. Yes, but it's fine. The second version, Bounty Bob, is much harder. Imagine that.
We got Berserk, which of course is good.
But now Berserk
owns that now.
Right? Was never released for the Atari 800. There was a version for the 5200. The 800 never got a version released. There was a demo version that I have on cart from Video 66 or Atari Sales, one of those Video 61, and it includes the speech and everything. It's really good, and that's this one. I think it was just ported from the 5200. I don't know exactly, but it is a different version.
But the good news is we can show images of these games as we're talking about.
And video.
Bristles, that's what I meant. Bristles, I don't remember.
Do you know Bristles? You're painting the inside of a house. It's a platform game.
Oh, yeah. I remember it now. In fact, I remember the video of it. Capture the Flag.
This is a two-person, brilliant-looking 3D game. Side-by-side, 3D views of a maze, and you can play alone or with someone else, and you have to go capture their flag.
Kind of like an early first-person shooter.
Without any 3D.
Shooting.
Yes.
Now, Encounter is a shooter.
Is a 3D shooter.
3D shooter.
A very nice one, too.
Yeah, that's one of the games I did a short about. I was very surprised how great it was. Is Encounter is Epic's?
Synapse. I'm enjoying those shorts, by the way, because I'm seeing games that a couple that I didn't know about, but I'm seeing you enjoy games that I found that I haven't been able to remind you about.
Here's another one that I don't recall is Flip and Flop.
So Flip and Flop is a little bit like Q-Bert, but you play two different games, sort of. When you're on top of the platforms, you are a kangaroo. And when you go underneath the platforms, you're a monkey. It's a very interesting game. It looks really nice, too.
Mule, which is Danny Button game, and one of the best Danny Button games, probably one of the best games of the era, and it's also an original Electronic Arts game. And one wonders, did they get the rights from Electronic Arts? Probably not. They probably got it from Free Fall Associates.
Wow, you're right.
Or from, maybe not even Free Fall, I guess that may be from the estate, Danny Button estate.
Maybe, yeah, that'd be cool.
O'Reilly's Bind.
I think
I don't remember anything about O'Reilly's
Mind. I think this is, and we'll put it up right now. I'm just gonna say right now, I think O'Reilly's Mind is like a gold digging version of Anteater. That's all I can think of at the moment.
I think I remember that too. This is really becoming a problem, Jeff, because I don't remember Wavy Navy either.
Wavy Navy is a Galaxian or Space Invader style game, but you're shooting on a boat that's not on a flat sliding surface. You have these waves that you go over, and it's a 2D shooty game, but when you move, you're not moving straight, you're moving on these waves. It's interesting.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It feels like that was an Apple II game.
It probably was. Probably was.
I'm gonna look it up and see if it's by Sirius, then it probably was. Hover Bover, which I believe is a Jeff Minter game, right?
It is. Excuse me. Hover Bover is a Jeff Minter game where you mow lawns.
That's awesome. It reminds me of Preppy 2 or something.
It's sort of like that, yeah. A little bit like Preppy 2.
That's awesome. Okay, Lee, which is originally Bruce Lee, which I do remember this being one of these, and this along with the Karate Kid and like Ghostbusters, and there's maybe another, maybe Zorro, like all these sort of 84, 85 era like action adventure games that I believe are probably the connecting material between the 8-bit era and like the what do they call them, the
like the NES sort of Metroidvania games.
Yeah, Metroidvania games.
One thing, though, I don't think Karate Kid is what you meant, because Karate Kid was a game that maybe came on the Commodore 64, the ST, and the Amiga, but it was a lot more fighting. It wasn't one of these. I think the games that came out like this were Conan, Goonies, Bruce Lee, and Zorro. Those are the ones, four Datasoft games.
I actually didn't mean so those are all the Datasoft games. I meant like that era, yeah. Of because the Ghostbusters was not that way either. Ghostbusters was a game where you drove around the city.
Did I say Ghostbusters?
Captured ghosts and bought stuff. I said it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think like
oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Ghostbusters.
I'm just saying this era, this is like, these are more sophisticated
yes.
games that yes. came at a time that a lot of people missed them. So this 84, 85 era has really interesting stuff that a lot of people never played.
The sophistication is marked by something very interesting, though. It's not sophistication simulation-wise. It's not sophistication wargame-wise or RPG-wise. It is adding elements to an arcade contest that gets you much closer to the NES era of games.
Right. And so it's cool that one's on here because it kind of shows that. But it'd be great, you know, someday to see all of them. And like you said, those are Datasoft games.
Yeah.
Who also, by the way, made the Dallas Adventure game, which in itself was also kind of like an in-betweener, kind of a weird. And a lot of these games were based on licensed titles, but they weren't the type of licensed games that
you'd want
the throwaway licenses that you imagine. would come.
When I think of the Dallas game, the Dallas computer, I think of Freaks and Geeks. I think was an episode where that kid loved Dallas, right?
Right. So then you got Millipede, which of course Atari's going to put on it because they own it. I think it between it and Centipede, it's a wash. They're both great.
I like this. I like Millipede more in these two versions.
But what comes next is crazy, because Seven Cities of Gold is another Danny Button game, but it's the only game I see on here, and I may be wrong. This is a long term game. You play this game over multiple sessions,
right?
It's a pretty incredible game where it can create its own worlds for you. You go and explore them. It's got some interesting rules about how you interact with the native people. I want to play this again badly. I was trying to buy a copy at the Vintage Computer Festival. There was one I had in my hand, but I couldn't buy it because the consignment area was not open yet. So then comes Boulder Dash, which is another one of these in-betweener amazing games that some people miss, that I believe started on the Atari and then sort of spread itself around. But it's, you know, an incredible sort of
How
would you describe it? It's a puzzle.
Boulder Dash is an action puzzle adventure game with less adventure elements. But the great thing about it, besides it just being a really cool, interesting action arcade game with adventure elements, is the fact that the Boulder Dash construction kit allowed people to make their own, and people would change the graphics, and they turned the Boulder Dash engine into hundreds of different games.
Oh, that's awesome.
All kind of similar, but they have different graphics. Some people added a little things here and there. You can find lots of games like that. There's a game called Robo on the Atari 8-bit. I think it came on other systems too. Same thing with that. It's similar to Boulder Dash, except for it's more like Chip's Challenge, and people did the same thing with it. Hundreds of Robo games. Different graphics, different things. So.
Oh, that's cool. I'm actually looking forward to that one a lot. Those two, Seven Seas of Gold and Boulder Dash for sure. Electroglide, though, I don't remember.
It's a precursor to sort of those flying driving games that fly. Like, what are some of the ones that were with solid 3D objects and you'd be flying? It's not. It's on the ground, but it's closer to one of those games than it is to a driving game, because you're not actually driving in a car. You're like in a... I would say it's close to being in a land speeder, but you can't tell. You just are going fast on a road. It's an interesting game. There's not a lot to it that I know of. I think you are trying to make it to a specific point and do some things, but there's no firing. There's really just driving and avoiding obstacles and picking up a couple things along the way. Looks nice.
I'm looking at it right now. Oh, it does. It looks like a driving game. Oh yeah, with some solid objects that you drive by. It's interesting. The other one. So the next comes Battle Zone. Interesting that they got. Is this 1987?
I don't know which version this is. There's two different versions of Battle Zone out there.
What sounds to me like this is the newer version.
Right. There's a 5200 version that's all wireframe, and there's an Atari 8-bit. And that wireframe was made for the Atari 8-bit, wasn't put out. Then there's an Atari 8-bit version, looks like it's 87, which is probably this one, which is wireframe, but it has background mountains that are shaded.
Yeah, it's
slight difference.
Wireframe, and it looks like it only came out on the XCGS.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is really interesting.
But XCGS cartridges would work on a regular XL or XE computer.
So my problem with Battlezone is that it's a great arcade game, but it's the thinnest of thin games to own and play on your console, because really, you know, it was kind of like an immersive, almost VR game when you think about it, where it was the experience for a quarter. You could pretend like you're in a tank and you could go in and shoot the stuff. As an actual game, I mean, there's not a lot that you do.
Yeah, it's not deep.
It, it, literally you just roll around and shoot stuff until you're not shooting more. And I know that sounds like a lot of other games of the era, but actually it's even thinner than that. It is neat though, don't get me wrong. Like the technically it's amazing.
Right.
But as an actual game, I never found it that much fun to play. Henry's House looks like it's Donkey Kong.
It's a platform game. I find it really difficult.
Yeah, a lot of these British budget titles that came out in the late 80s are like incredibly hard. I have some that I did those shorts about, like Dizzy or something. Not Dizzy. There's one that's like, I'll find the name of it in a sec. Oh, they're like you can't even get past the first screen.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous.
There's one that's not British. I think maybe, but it's called Snokey, and it's kind of similar. I think it came out in the U.S., but it's the same thing. It's like they hadn't really worked out the fun of a platform game in some of these yet. So the fun is falling every time you move, right? Like they haven't really and some of them did get it in pre-Mario. They worked out some fun ways to make a platform game. But many of them are like, the fun comes from you dying every 2 seconds. It's like, that's not fun.
Right, and that's not that much fun.
I don't know if that's Henry's House, though.
You know what is fun is The Last Starfighter.
Yeah.
Which is right here as Star Raiders 2. So we know this is The Last Starfighter because we downloaded it from a BBS.
Right. This is, but you know, it wasn't available for us to get. This is a time when you could not buy Atari. End of 1985... You could not buy Atari 800 software anywhere, really.
No.
So
you did. There was one place you could buy it. I remember I was desperate to buy Ultima 4, and I had mom drive us all over town, everywhere, and we ended up at a Crown Book because I remember that Crown Book said they sold computer software, and there it was sitting, like it was one of two games they had.
Right.
It was with sports.
But you there was no shop that had a selection of games like this.
No, it was an adventure. It was an adventure, you know, most of the time having an Atari computer after 1983 was an adventure.
Right.
Trying to go find to buy stuff for it. But we did. Airball, which I know what this game is. This is what was big on the Amiga. I don't think I've ever played the 8-bit.
And it was on the ST also.
What is it?
You move an air ball through a house.
I do remember what it is. I just thought you would explain it more.
Oh, no, I was just saying it was on the NC too. I thought you knew what it was. So Airball is a game where
it is. I was just thought maybe you would describe it more.
Anyway, Airball is a game where you try to move an air ball through a house. It's like a platform game. It's got very nice graphics on the Atari 8-bit.
Oh, that's cool. I think like this is a good. It's probably a good like tech demo for what the 8-bit could do. Crystal Castles. I don't think I ever played that one on the 8-bit. Is this a 5200 game? Do you think?
It did come out for the Atari 8-bit also, and the 5200. This is the same game on both, and it's a good conversion.
And the last one is Yoomp, which is a late era. Like I'd say, I want to call it homebrew, but I don't think that's the right word for it.
It's a homebrew.
Atari seems to own the rights to this now.
So now it's an official title. But it was a homebrew at the time.
Those are the 25 games. And I will say, like, I think I listened to the Retro Hour and they talked about this. And I think it was Robbie who's like, I think it's got all the best games on it. I'm like, no, yeah. I'm thinking, no, Robbie, it has, there were 3,000 games made for the Atari 8-bit. This has some of them.
Tell you a little bit about their coverage. It and it's fine because they just don't know much of the Atari 400 or 8-bit line. They do have heard many of their people they interview talk about the Atari 400 as their first computer and things like that. They paid it nice coverage for how disinterested they really should be and are about it. I'll put it that way. That's okay. No, that's what I'm saying. Like they did a good. They paid it much more coverage than they should have for how disinterested they are in the subject. It's not a Spectrum. It's not a BBC Micro. It's none of those.
That same company that made the C64 Mini and the Amiga Mini chose this as their next one.
Well, the next one literally is the Amiga, full-sized Amiga that's coming out at the end of this year.
Right.
That's why. So they liked it. That company has done a lot for Commodore. And now they're starting to do a little bit for Atari, and so they just like
to continue. Be a full-sized 800 to come out as well.
That would be good too. 800.
Maybe those things are down the line. I mean, it's, you know, all things seem to be being created and released now, which is great. But I will say, if you look at this list of games, I mean, this is with Mule, with Boulder Dash, with Seven Cities of Gold, and a bunch of the arcades and stuff. This is a pretty good selection, though.
It's a good selection. They did a nice wide selection. One thing on that, I have a feeling that the Jaguar is in their list of consoles that they're going to create. For.
Okay.
I have a feeling.
I hope so.
Okay.
Let's talk about the 400.
Yes.
So what do you think from this list, what's obvious to you that's missing? And I have a few off the top of my head right now that I would say that people need to play.
Yes, of course.
Archon and Pinball Construction Set, I think, would actually... Because there's not a lot of games in here that take two players, Archon would have been amazing because it's a two-player game and it's really fun. And Pinball Construction Set, because you obviously can save the game here,
yes.
Being able to build and save and making a whole new community of building those pinball machines on Pinball Construction Set would have been really, really fun. It would have given... It's pretty deep and time-consuming as well to do. So those are two. I mean, obviously, those are ones that Electronic Arts owns. Probably still.
I would have liked to have seen Hero. The problem is that it's an Activision game, and that's where you sort of get the problem.
I mean, doesn't Pitfall 2 on the Atari 8-bit have the entire Pitfall game in it or something?
No,
well?
Pitfall 2 has Pitfall, and what the guy... So, here's the lore...
Has Pitfall.
Okay, here's the lore about Pitfall 2. Okay. Pitfall 2, the guy who created the Atari 800 version and the Commodore version, two different guys. They took two different approaches. The guy who created the Atari 800 version took the Atari 2600 code, ported it to the 800, improved the graphics, and had so much time left over, he used the included graphics to create a whole new game and shove it into the cartridge.
And
the Commodore 64 guy, a whole new game based on... So Pitfall 2 and I guess Pitfall 3. It's just a whole new Pitfall game. But the Commodore 64 guy, he rewrote the entire thing, did some nicer graphic stuff, didn't have time to put the entire game back in. It's been ported to the Commodore 64 now. But that's just the lore. Like, the two different approaches were done to create that port. And that gave the guy time to just put a whole new game in as a bonus.
Yeah, that's cool. River Raid isn't a really great advance on the Atari 8-bit, but it does have some pretty cool...
It would be something I would throw in there.
And the other game that I think from Activision that would be really cool here is Dreadnought Factor. That's a really fun game.
Games that should be on here. Okay, so I did mention Hero. I think that Draconis...
Now, you've gone through and you've made a ton of videos about games that you believe that people should check out.
Yeah.
And I think... So, and you've done a bunch of those in the last like few weeks. So, my feeling is you're going to choose some games from this list.
From which list?
From that list.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to choose some games from those videos.
I have the games that I haven't even made. I've researched, but I haven't made videos for yet that I might. But one I would like to see is there's no real modern platform action adventure on here in that realm of like a Nintendo game. Yes, there's some that are kind of close, but that would be Draconis. It's a 1988 game where you are like a dragon with multiple abilities and you have to accomplish things in these caves. It's really cool. You breathe fire and stuff like that. I would like to see the both Jumpman Jr. or just one of the two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That would be fantastic. Atari had a great XEGS version of Mario Brothers, the Nintendo game. I don't know why it's not on here, but I'd like to see it.
You know why. There's no way that would ever be on.
Montezuma's Revenge.
Oh, yeah.
And Jaeger is around, and he probably would license it to them to put it on there, Robert Jaeger. I definitely would like to see, you know, a hard game, another in this sort of... a game that Atari owns the rights to called Twilight World, which is like a... It's like another... action adventure game. Atari started making a couple of these in their later years, and Atari put this out for the ST, the Amiga, and the Atari 8-bit. The game called Twilight World, and it's a you run and you shoot with a little kid who has a yo-yo, But it's like a weapon, and you run through these caves and use your yo-yo as a weapon. There's lots of them, though.
I have a few, too. I was just thinking of, like, I would love to see some of those Adventure International games. Preppy 2, which has nothing to do with Preppy. I'd love to see Seamus, Fort Apocalypse, Zeppelin. Those are all great, like, games from Synapse. And some sort of mini RPG like Alibaba and the 40 Thieves,
right,
you know,
right.
or even, I mean, Ultima 3 or Ultima 4. Those, having one of the Ultimas on here would have been incredible. But again, there's no way to do that because Electronic Arts owns.
Well, you know, who owns the LucasArts games? So there's an entire set of 5 or 6 LucasArts games.
I think probably owns.
Yeah. Okay. So the Eidolon, Rescue on Fractalus, Ball Blazer, those would be great ones. I think actually Epix owns those, actually. I don't know who owns Epix, but Epix has the rights to some of those because they don't have the Star Wars name in them anywhere. So I think,
interesting. I don't know. I don't know who actually owns them at this. I thought Ball Blazer and Mexican Fractalus were literally made by LucasArts for Atari.
They did, but the rights went to Epix to distribute them. They may have kept the rights to those games. They ported them to the Commodore 64 and a bunch of other systems.
That's got
to
be some sort of legal hell to figure out the rights to those games.
You're right about that. From the Synapse list, I think Alley Cat would be a fantastic game. Alley Cat and Blue Max. Oh, Blue Max, because they did have an SNES cartridge.
Forgot about that.
Alley Cat is like a platform game with lots of mini games, and you play a cat that's trying to get down with a female cat, a male cat trying to get down with a female cat. I mean, that is essentially what they say. There's a game called Rainbow Walker, which is sort of the precursor to Yoomp, which is you jumping, it's like a 3D Qbert, I guess I would call it that. And there's some shooting games like Shadow World and Survivor that are just awesome from Synapse too.
You know what I found from Synapse that I had never actually played back in the day, but I played it now and I'm like, wow, this is awesome, is Necromancer.
Oh, Necromancer is a good game too. That came out on the XDGS also.
Yeah, and also on my list would be Star League Baseball for sure.
Star Bowl Football would be good too. I like that.
I wonder why Eastern Front, I mean, that's Atari owns that. I wonder why that's not on the list. Maybe they're planning.
I think you're correct. It should be on the list too.
And if you're going to do Eastern Front, you might as well do Excalibur, which is another Chris Crawford game, which is actually pretty amazing game. For
Excalibur would be a nice one to play in there. I would like to see Drop Zone by Archer MacLean. International Karate, also by Archer MacLean. Those would be good.
You know, Screaming Wings.
Screaming Wings?
The 8-bit version is actually really good.
And there's somebody cleaned up the graphics and made a new version of it that would be interesting to put out too, because they made it look a little bit better. But Screaming Wings is a good game on the Atari bit.
It's awesome.
Somebody owns the actual rights to that Tempest, and it's, I know that Video 61 or whatever owns like Tempest Extreme, someone made that, but somebody owns the actual rights to the Tempest prototype that was made for the Atari 5200. If someone could clean that up and put it out, that'd be fantastic to have that. And Vanguard.
And then I want to say, I think to finish off, because we could talk about this for hours.
Sure.
I would love if Atari had put out the 8-bit computer version of ET, the extraterrestrial. It maybe changed the name or something, just so people could see that, like, at the time, there was a pretty decent ET game that came out.
That's,
I mean, it's literally kind of the same game as the
kind of,
as the VCS game. You're trying to collect the parts.
It's better.
But it's a better game. It's like it got scrolling map and all sorts of really cool stuff, and says ET Phone Home in it. I think that would have been a neat from a historical.
What about the What If pack? That'd be great.
What do you mean?
Well, what if we put out this Pac-Man instead of that Pac-Man? What if we put out this ET instead of that ET?
Well, that's the whole story of the.
That's the story of Atari.
Of the candy of the Atari 400 that was supposed to be an arcade machine. Yeah, that was and we had some history in there too, and a bunch of other stuff. I think it was a really interesting episode from like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But now that we're in our final season.
Yeah, in our final season, we should cover as much as we can before the season ends.
Right. Which is forever.
If you have, like, you see all the beginning of the year, you see, like, one guy on YouTube say, oh, I'm quitting. And then everyone else makes a video about why they're not quitting, but they put I'm quitting in their title. That's kind of what we're doing right now. We're not doing it,
though. We didn't even say that. We're just...
No, I'm just saying it's funny. Like, it's like, let me tell you the homebrew games that I think you should load onto your Atari 400 Mini. How about that? Oh. I have a list of homebrew titles that I think you should look up and you should put on your Atari 400 Mini and, you, and as the first games you add. How about that?
Okay.
Okay.
You buy them first from the authors?
If they're available, I've put those links in there, but some of them aren't available. Some of them are available for free. These are homebrews. If they're available, yes. You should buy the ROM if it's available. And there's one that is, and I'll tell you. Okay. Atari Blast. This is one.
I played that, but it will play.
Atari Blast should play because it's an emulator. Should play. You just have to have 1 meg set as your memory. Bosconian, which I don't know where it's available, but I purchased a card of it. So Bosconian. There is a Commando homebrew of the original Atari XEGS release that got shelved. That's available somewhere. You to load on your Atari, I'm not going to tell you where, but it's available someplace to load onto your Atari 400 Mini.
Fantastic.
Crownland, when played in PAL with the proper colors, is a much more elaborate looking Super Mario Brothers than Super Mario Brothers.
Wow.
Demo's Quest in Abuck Land. That's a great game, Demo's Quest. I'm just going to say, if you want to look up and find a really good Donkey Kong game for your Atari 8-bit, there's something called Donkey Kong Arcade, which takes the original port and adds some graphics and sounds to it. It's fantastic. There's a great game called Flob, which basically you run from room to room in this, and you turn to solve the puzzle in each room. You press the button, and it flips the room upside down, and then you'll fall whichever way, and if you fall to the ground, you flip the room over again with the button, and then you fall up, and you're trying to get through the room by running, but you have to battle obstacles by changing, flipping the room on its vertical axis. Last Squadron. This is the game where you take Screaming Wings and you take Screaming's idea and you set it on steroids, and this is a game you can purchase for $10. I purchased the ROM for this, so I have a purchase. You can also buy it on cartridge. You have to find this somewhere, because I know you'll never be able to buy it, but there's a Ms. Pac-Man arcade, an arcade version of Ms. Pac-Man that's up the ante on Ms. Pac-Man. Scramble, a fantastic version by Paul Lay from PlaySoft. This was for sale for a while in cartridge form. I don't know where it's for sale in ROM form, but I know it's available in ROM form. Stunt Car Racer. This is a version of the ST, Amiga, and Commodore 64 game for the Atari 8-bits, and it completely rocks.
I think that was the... Before we started this podcast, back in 2018, we were at your house, and you're like, I got to show you this game, and it was that 8-bit version of Stunt Car Racer.
Right.
That was like, hey, we should do this podcast. It's really the genesis.
Exactly. Tempest Extreme, which I mentioned, is purchasable only as a cartridge from Video 61. My thought now is maybe they'll change that now that there's a mini out, that 400 mini that can play their games. Maybe they'll start selling ROMs, so keep that on the back burner. There's a Time Pilot homebrew, which is
played that one.
Fantastic. Available for download because they can't sell it.
Then
there's a game called X8, which is the best horizontal spaceship shooter in the modern days. There were a couple that are pretty good at the end of the Atari 8-bit's life, but this is the best new one. This is my favorite new one, besides Atari Blast horizontal shooters.
Right.
And then that's it. That's it. There's more homebrew, but those are the ones I want to talk about.
There's so much.
We could go on forever.
We could go on forever. But I think that we've got our direction set for the next 12 months or so is to really pound this 400 mini and figure out what it can do and what games are good for it and all that stuff. So I'm really excited about it.
Podcast 400 mini. I will be putting out ST episodes on ST Log magazines as bonuses, and there will be both ST and Atari 400 800 mini videos coming out, and videos on select other topics.
Well, don't forget, we're also going to, you're going to put some of that ST stuff on Old School Gamer.
And Old School Gamer's going to get some versions of the ST stuff too in a new form too. Yes.
Cool. All right. Well, this is going to be fun. I can't wait. A lot of amazing stuff that many people have never seen before.
Yes. So. Going to be fantastic. Good to see Atari supporting the Atari 8-bit line, because until they put out the Atari 50th, they had never really mentioned it ever on anything.
I don't think anyone there really understood what it was. I want to say one other thing. Gen X Grown Up has been doing an amazing job of also pointing out lots of Atari 8-bit
stuff. I know. Gen X Grown Up's great.
To play. So if you want any more stuff, go head over to Gen X Grown Up and check out their shorts.
I mean,
there's so much stuff.
As the 4MIDI comes out, he will have a video on how to put ROMs on it. That's where you're going to find it. First one. He does it with all the other devices that they've been putting out for the GameStation Pro and stuff like that, and the 2600, although you can't do that with 2600 Plus, but he showed how to use multi-carts and things like that with it. So. Okay.
Very cool.
Well, until next time, Steve, into the vertical blank.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.